Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show you're about to listen to was recorded on Saturday, New Year's Day 2011, on the Premier Radio Networks. This is episode 731. Enjoy.
Good day to you. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Happy New Year! 1-1-1-1. A brand new year, and we're going to be celebrating by talking about how to fix all the stuff that you've got for the holidays. This is the show where we talk about technology, how to use it, how to choose it, how to abuse it if you wish, and how to lose it if you're done. My phone number is 888-827-5536. But don't write that down. Just write 8888 Ask Leo. That's easy to remember, isn't it? 8888 Ask Leo. It doesn't have to be ask. It could be tell, it could be yell, it could be scream, it could be anything at Leo, but we only have the one number, so that's the one we'll use. 8888 Ask Leo. This is the seventh anniversary of the show, by the way. I started doing this show, well, I've been doing tech talk of some form or fashion since 1992. One, I think. 90 or 91. Full time. And you know, that's it. And started doing TV in 92. But never stopped doing... Well, I did. I did stop doing the radio show for a few years in that middle period when I thought I was going to be a television star. When that dream was crushed, 6 years of television and nothing to show for it, I came back to radio, and I've been doing it ever since. So that's a long time doing tech talk, 7 years being the tech guy. I started on, I think it was the first Saturday in January 2004, but I think it was the third, wasn't it? I can't remember the exact date, but this is good enough. 7 years ago at KFI, our mothership in Los Angeles, the big 50,000-watt blowtorch was all for you. And we syndicated the show 3 years ago, and thanks to the great folks at Premier Radio Networks. Now we're in almost 140 stations around the world, and on the internet, everywhere you go, you can't escape me. 8888 Ask Leo. So let's celebrate a brand new year. We could talk about next week, a little preview, because next week we're going to be doing the show as we did the very first year, 7 years ago, from the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. Every year, this is the largest trade show in the United States for technology. One of the largest of all. Several hundred thousand people go every year. We pretty much take over Vegas, which is funny because the nerds aren't really big gamblers, so they usually shut down tables and they double the room rates because they got to get their money somewhere. No, some $50 rooms, not for you geeks, no. You got to pay your way. So everybody's there. I mean, everybody from television manufacturers like Sony and Panasonic to computer manufacturers like HP. But you also, and this is the thing I find most interesting, you also see what people think is going to be the big product category for the year to come. So last January, when we did the show at CES, if you heard, you remember. And if you don't, you can go back to techguylabs.com and you can listen. Actually, it might be fun to listen. I'll have to go back and listen to the first show at techguylabs.com where we did CES 2004 and see how things have changed. But you might remember last year that the big show story, the big CES story, was 3D TV. But what you see at CES often never emerges. You know, it's not necessarily, here's the stuff we're going to put in the store tomorrow. Usually it's, here's the stuff we're going to put in the store for the fall, for the holiday shopping season, 2011. So frequently you'll see stuff at CES that doesn't come out for months or, in fact, never comes out. We see the other big category at CES last year was ebook readers because Amazon's Kindle seemed to be doing well. We didn't know at the time, and they now know it was doing very well indeed. I'll talk about that in a second. This was what everybody thought. Well, ebook readers, that should be a big category. So we saw a dozen of those. Only two or three have come out. Some of them are actually coming out soon, like now, ironically. And, of course, the third big category last year was in advance of the iPad, which no one knew anything about, including the name. I think at the time at CES in January, we all thought it was going to be called the iSlate. And so there were a number of, it was funny, there were a number of Slate products that came out last year. Well, were announced last year. Some of them still have not and may never come out. And now that the iPad is out and it shows its true dominance of this category, of course, everybody's scrambling. So what will we see this year at CES? Well, of course, we'll see more of the same, more 3D TVs. That's a very weak category, if you ask me. I mean, people are buying them, but only because it kind of comes with the set if you want a high-end, high-def set. I'd love to hear from you, actually. If you have an opinion on HD, 3D rather, on HD, but only if you have one. I don't want to hear from people who say, oh, I think it's a great idea, who haven't bought one. I'd like to hear from somebody who got one maybe this year. And what do you think? Was it worth it? Are you enjoying it? Or are you using it? Do you ever use the 3D feature, or is it something you never use? 8888-ASK-LEO. I'd be curious. It's my opinion that 3D is just a gimmick. It's not something people are going to end up. It won't be a universal thing in all TVs, and I don't think people are going to end up using it a lot. And especially if they don't get some 3D content out. There's a real dearth. There's only a handful of 3D discs for your 3D Blu-ray player. But you know, that's what happened when HD started. If you remember way back to 2004, when we were talking about this. And it eventually caught on, and there are now lots of HD discs, of course, on Blu-ray. So if it catches on, I guess there'll be a lot of 3D content. I just can't imagine it catching on. I don't get it. Ebook readers certainly have caught on. Amazon announced that its Kindle is selling, it's the number one selling product on Amazon, beating even the iPad. And the speculation is it's actually selling at the same clip as the iPhone, which is probably one of the best selling consumer electronic devices out there. And especially this new Kindle 3. Did you get one for the holidays? The Kindle 3 is light. It's very slick looking. It really is. It's not. And I thought the iPad was going to kill the Kindle. I thought, well, why would you get a Kindle? Well, because it's $130. Or $139. I didn't know Amazon would drop the price that much, I guess. But at $139, it's, you know, one-third the cost of the cheapest. One quarter the cost, really, of the cheapest iPad. And it's really a better reader than the iPad. So if what you're really all about is reading, the Kindle is a great choice. And yeah, the number one product of 2010, I think we can safely say. And sales of Kindle and Nook, which is the Barnes & Noble product, which is also a very good product, are now outselling books. The paper kind, the dead tree variety. So people are really, that's really catching on. So CES was right about that one last year. They knew those would be big. They were right about the iPad, but nobody came up with an iPad killer in advance of the iPad. And I wonder if this year we'll see, I think we will see at CES, a lot of pretenders saying, hey, the best of which will probably be running Android, but we should also see RIM's Playbook, which is running a operating system that RIM bought. RIM's the BlackBerry company. They bought something called Qunix, and they've turned that into a touch operating system. And Microsoft's expected to announce Windows 7-based tablets at CES. I'm sorry, shouldn't laugh. Maybe they'll be great. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. The website, techguylabs.com. My resolution for New Year's, to fix that site. Make it look like it belongs to this century, not the last. But at least it gets the job done. There's search there, and thanks to James DeRuvo, who writes everything down, there's a lot of good content. And, of course, every show we've done over the last 7 years, they're all there. techguylabs.com. We go to the phones and your calls next. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, for 2011, somebody tweeted, boy, that really, I think Glenn Rubenstein, my friend Glenn Rubenstein, who's a tech writer, tweeted, boy, 2011 sounds like the future.
It does, doesn't it?
I'm speaking to you now from the year 2011, where flying cars have eliminated traffic problems entirely. All disease has been eradicated by gene therapy. And all the men are 7 feet tall. Women were smart enough not to get the enlarging treatment. Where's my jetpack? Says Wichita in our chat room. Our chat room is also available at techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. Just click the chat link. Always a lot of fun in there. And they got a big shout out. I don't know if you saw it. Okay, a little horn tooting. New York Times had a little article about my podcast network. They mentioned the radio show, but about the podcast network on Monday. And but I was really pleased that the writer, John Kalish, who I've spoken to many times, he really gets it. And he pointed out a big, fat section of that article that the community, the audience, is what makes it. And the live feedback from the audience, which, of course, everybody in talk radio has known for years, is really makes it a different kind of medium. And so we always have a chat room going, he pointed out, with as many as 1,500 people in there, and they called it live fact-checking, which it is. And if you want to be part of that, I have always called the chat room my brain, my externalized brain, because, frankly, my memory is going, but the chat room never forgets. Sometimes I wish they would. TechGuyLabs.com. And you can click the chat link and join us in the chat room. Always a lot of fun. It's kind of quiet right now, I think because it's New Year's Day. It's only about 550 people in there. So there's plenty of room. Let's say hi to Gary, Lake Balboa, California. Our first call of the day, the first call of the year. Hello, Larry.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I guess if you do it properly, you're also the first call of the decade, right? The decade doesn't begin until 2011.
Happy New Year. Thanks for working on New Year's.
Oh, hey, this isn't why. You know, when I talk about work and people ask, what do you do? Well, I talk. I sit and I talk. People kind of look funny at me, so I can't really. It's not fair to say I'm working on New Year's. I'm just sitting here talking with you. So I like that. That's not work. What can I do for you today?
Got a question. I'm looking for a new smartphone. I'm with AT&T. And it's for business, so I need a quality phone, calendar, internet, contacts, that kind of stuff. What would you recommend?
Well, you know, you're going to stay with AT&T?
Well, there's four of us in the family.
Yeah, you have a family plan. Look, I'm not trying to talk you out of AT&T, especially if AT&T is working well for you where you live.
It's okay. It's not great, but it's...
I keep trying to find the person who says... I love AT&T. I have yet to find that. Well, of course, you because you're on AT&T, you have access to the king of the smartphones, the iPhone. Is there some reason that you're not considering that?
No. Well, you've talked a lot about the Droid and Android.
Yeah, but that's as much, you know, the reason I mention it so much is because it's a way for somebody who's not on AT&T to get a smartphone.
Oh, I see.
Now, they do, AT&T sells the Samsung Galaxy S. I think they call theirs, the Captivate, the Activate, the Enervate? I can't remember, but it's one of the Vates. they have a different name for every carrier, but it's all the same phone. It's a beautiful phone, 4-inch, Super AMOLED screen, which is the best-looking screen out there. I think even better than the iPhone. The iPhone screen, the iPhone 4 screen, is the king of the resolution. It's got the highest resolution out there.
Right.
As far as the quality of the color, the black of the blacks, I think the Samsung Galaxy S's are very good. And it's a great Android phone. It is not one thing that bothers me. It is still at a older version of Android. It's at 2.1. The current version is 2.3. And I really don't think anybody should buy an Android phone that's not at least 2.2. There's a, despite the fact that these are just point releases, there's a big difference. 2.2 is really the first version of Android that I think comes up to match the iPhone in terms of responsiveness, which is important to people. You know, when you flick it, it moves. And 2.2 is a lot faster. 2.3 is even faster still. But for some reason, Samsung, even though they've released 2.2 in Europe on these phones, have for some reason has not released it in the States on these phones, which bugs the hell out of me. The heck out of me. So, I shouldn't swear on New Year's Day. Look, my first resolution already broken. So I would, but I wouldn't hesitate looking at the iPhone. But at the same time, I wouldn't hesitate looking at a Samsung Galaxy S.
Now,
so,
I have an iPhone, and the quality is lousy.
Yeah, yeah, and this is part of the problem is we don't know whether to blame AT&T or the iPhone. I think it's a combination of both. I drop calls, you know. I still carry around the iPhone because there are apps on the iPhone that I really like that aren't available. Not very many anymore, but there are a few that aren't available on Android. We just found out today that Android has 200,000 apps. So, you know, 200,000 is a lot of apps. That's different applications on Android. iPhone is about 300,000 now. So you can see that Android's catching up very rapidly. And I think in many ways is superior. There are some features of Android I prefer. If you are looking at an Android phone, you don't need a physical keyboard, do you?
No.
I would say if you are looking at an Android phone, do look at the Samsung.
Okay.
I think it's the Activate. It's either the Activate or the Captivate. I cannot remember. another good one, Dan in my chat room, Armad, is pointing out that the AT&T also offers the Incredible. And I think the Incredible is up at 2.2 now, so that might be a good choice as well. Go in there and play with them, because a phone is, boy, you know, this is the most personal of devices. You know, you're going to be holding it in your hands, holding it to your ear. You're going to be living with it.
Yep.
And I think it's a great device. Now, I have to admit, there's one more. Okay, here's the wild card, now that I've really confused you. AT&T also sells the Windows 7 phone, Windows Phone 7, the Samsung Focus, which is also a great phone. And it's very similar to the Samsung Captivate Galaxy S thing. It's a very similar phone. I've got both of them here, and I don't know if you'd be able to. You'd be hard pressed to tell the difference, in a blind taste test. So, I think Windows Phone 7 is this your first smartphone?
No, I've had them for quite a while.
My Blackberries
Trio, but it was first was Trio, and I liked that
Trio. Okay,
but it was so big.
Yeah, all of these are thin and gorgeous now. I think you probably should look at either the Samsung Focus if you can. Are you a Windows or a Mac user?
Well, that was another question actually.
Oh, interesting. Well, iPhone works. I mean, works with both. The Windows Phone 7 doesn't really have a Macintosh interface, so it's. I really can only recommend it to people who are primarily Windows users. But Android doesn't care, really doesn't care. And Apple, of course, works a little bit better on Mac, I think.
Right.
I would say you would not be unhappy with any of those. I agree that the iPhone drops calls and has problems on AT&T that the other phones don't seem to have.
Okay.
So if that's something that concerns you, especially in your neck of the woods, depends on how AT&T's signal is in your area, I would look at the Samsungs. Those are good phones. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme, for high-speed internet at an amazingly low price. Call 866-2-GET-NET to get DSL Extreme. I apologize for equivocating on our last call when he said, well, what should I get? It's a personal thing buying a cell phone, and I could say what my favorite phone is, and I will say what my favorite phone is, but it's not on AT&T. It's the Nexus S, the latest Google phone. It's the one I'm carrying these days. But it's only T-Mobile. You could put an AT&T SIM in it, but you wouldn't get 3G, which kind of you need at least 3G data. Edge only is just way too slow. But it's a beautiful phone. It's 2.3 version of Android, which really is better. It's snappy. It has some negatives. It's missing an SD card slot, so you can't add your own memory. It comes with 16 gigs. You know, it's funny how we complain. It only has 16 gigs of storage. See, maybe it's just because I'm an old guy. But I remember when it was a big deal that desktop computer hard drives had 2 gigs. That was a huge deal. But, you know, if you're putting music and movies and TV shows on your phone, of course, 16 gigs is probably not enough. I think with a little economy, you probably can survive. It's got plenty of room for apps. Android now lets you store your apps on the SD card in some cases. It depends on the app. But with a gigabyte, it has a gigabyte of app storage. That's more than enough for hundreds of apps. Apps aren't that big. And I love the screen, as I mentioned, the AMOLED screen. It's a great phone, and it's a Google phone, and this is why I like it, I think. It doesn't have the additional kind of cruft that companies like Motorola, Samsung, HTC put on top of their phones. It's just pure Google. And I like a pure Google experience. However, my phone previous to this that I liked on Verizon, and I think a lot of people on Verizon say I'll never go to AT&T, and I don't blame them. My previous preference was the Droid X on Verizon. I really like that. It does have that Motorola blur, which I'm not as crazy about, but at least it's 2.2. I feel pretty confident that this is the year Apple puts the iPhone on Verizon. So if you've been saying, I would love an iPhone, but I don't dare go, I really can't live with AT&T, then maybe take a look at when it comes out, and I don't know when it'll be. They might announce it this month. In the past few years, Apple doesn't go to CES. We're talking about the Consumer Electronics Show, which we'll be at next week. Apple doesn't go to this show. Hasn't gone in years. But, and maybe it's just a coincidence, but Apple always makes an announcement right before CES, and several times it's just taken the air out of CES. I remember when the iPhone announcement happened a few years ago. It was right before CES, and that's all anybody could talk about. No matter what was showing at CES, everybody was talking about the company that wasn't there, Apple. And they've done that several times. The iPad announcement was the conversation piece of last January. It hadn't happened yet. But it's all anybody could talk about is, what's Apple going to do? We know they're going to do a tablet. What are they going to do? So I expect that this year, Steve Jobs, he's a competitive cuss. He really is. I suspect that he will announce the iPhone 5 or iPad 2 or something right before CES. Or maybe he'll just be content to have all the people at CES speculating, as he was last year. But I do think if they're going to put a Verizon phone, I'd be willing to bet it's that the announcement, at least, if not the phone, will be this month. In past, what they've done is they've announced the phone, and then a few months later, the phone comes out. It'll be an iPhone 5. It has to be redesigned. You can't take the existing iPhone and put it on any CDMA network, which is what Sprint and Verizon are. This iPhone 4 will only work on a GSM network. That's T-Mobile or AT&T. And in this case, it's locked to AT&T. So if you want an iPhone, if you've been waiting for the iPhone but didn't really want to go with AT&T, this could be your year. And there's a lot, let me be clear, there's a lot of good in the iPhone, even the iPhone 4. I'm not crazy about how it drops phone calls, I admit. And that's one of the reasons I don't use it as my primary phone. But I do carry it around because the apps are beautiful. They're elegant. The Retina display is very high resolution. It's really great for photography in particular. If you want to look at pictures, this iPhone 4 is great for that. I mean, it really is. The Retina display is just spectacular. It also has the best camera of any phone I've used. It's only 5 megapixels, but you can't judge a camera, a digital camera, by the number of megapixels. You really have to look at the quality of the images. And the quality of the images taken from the iPhone are absolutely, no question in my mind, superior to anything else. The Nexus S is the next best, by the way. Its 5 megapixel camera is very good, but not quite as detailed or as perfect, especially in low light, as the iPhone 4. And the HDR feature they built in the iPhone 4, which I mocked a little bit, you know, it's pretty good. It comes with the 4.1 or later. And let's not forget the number and range and quality of camera applications available for the iPhone are fantastic. You can do all sorts of great things. Pro HDR lets you do even better HDR. That's high dynamic range photography than the iPhone's built-in HDR. And for a camera phone, it turns out being able to do high dynamic range photography does make a big difference, because the dynamic range of a camera phone is particularly bad. Its Auto Stitch Panorama app is fantastic. I love it. Color Splash lets you black and white everything in a picture except for one bit of it easily. Camera Plus, which just came back out, is a fantastic application that lets you do all sorts of fun things to your images. It's designed by a photographer to give you a lot of capabilities. There are a lot of pro apps as well that photographers use. And, of course, a ton of filters and other applications. And Apple's own iMovie is on here. It's a very credible video camera as well as my favorite photo app, though, is Instagram. It's kind of like Twitter for photography. I just love it. And to be honest, I love it so much, it's the only reason I still carry an iPhone 4 around with me. It's just so I can view and take Instagram pictures. Here's Kevin Pollak. So it's a fun, I have to say, it's a really, I'm looking at New Year's Eve pictures on Instagram right now. It's a really great application. Good news is that it's going to come to Android. I think really what you're going to have to look at is operating system and hardware, because the difference in application availability between Android and iPhone is small and growing smaller. There's very little gap now. As I said, 200,000 applications on Android. Everything you want. Well, one won't be on there, and that's Netflix. Reed Hastings, the CEO at Netflix, says, yeah, we'll put Netflix on the iPad. We'll put Netflix on the iPhone. We'll even put Netflix on Windows Phone 7, but we'll never put it on Android because the copy protection, they say, is not sufficient. I don't know what that means. I really don't. And I don't know how important it is to watch a movie on your iPhone. But if Netflix, but if that capability is important to you, well, that's one reason to stick with iPhone. The reason I equivocate, the reason I don't say this is the best phone, is it's a very personal decision. And I think for many people, many of my friends, my closest friends, laugh at me, mock me for not saying the iPhone's the best phone out there. They say, no, what are you, crazy? It's obviously the best phone. I think for 3 years it was obviously the best smartphone. For 3 years there, I would not deny that. In the last year, Android, I think, has caught up and in many ways surpassed. So but that's an opinion, you see, and you need to try it and see. You need to see how big a screen you can handle. If you like a big screen, the Evo or the Droid X with a 4.3-inch screen, fantastic. Some people like the Dell Streak, which is a 5-inch screen. Some people love, in fact, a million people have purchased the Galaxy Tab, which is a 7-inch screen. It's not a phone, but it's Android. That's the nice thing about Android. You have a lot of choices. The iPhone, you got the iPhone 4, and that's it. 8888 Ask Leo. Your phone calls right after this. The Tech Guy, that's me, since 2004, bringing you technology knowledge. 8888, Ask Leo, that's the number. Cannon Valley Village, California. Let's talk more about phones. Hi, Ken.
Hey, Leo, Happy New Year to you. I was just finishing up some Angry Birds here, but I'm on with you now.
You know, I just saw some stats about Angry Birds. It is amazing how Angry Birds has just taken over the world.
It's completely addictive.
I guess that's it. You know, it's not my favorite game ever. I have played it a lot. I've gone through all the basic levels, and of course they keep releasing more levels, so that kind of makes it harder. But I think Angry Birds is, I don't think I can think of anything more successful in my memory than Angry Birds. It's on all the platforms now, including Android, free on Android.
Judging by the downloads, it is the most popular.
Yeah, although the folks who do Angry Birds say that they make more money on the iPhone platform and that it's a better platform. I don't know how. In some way, it's a better platform for them. I can't imagine that they really mind. Christmas Day, by the way, the biggest Angry Birds Day in history. 1 million people downloaded Angry Birds, which means probably 1 million new phone owners, right?
Right. Exactly.
If you've not played the game, don't. Whatever you do, don't download it. They said how many millions of hours are used every day. It's something like 200 million hours a day are used playing Angry Birds. It's the biggest productivity killer in the history of mankind.
Absolutely.
Anyway, what can I do for you?
I'm on Verizon. I have an HTC Incredible since last April, which I absolutely adore.
Great phone.
And it's absolutely wonderful. And on your recommendation, I purchased it. But I have found that it is loading applications like Slacker and Skype that I cannot uninstall. It's taking up memory, and I find it abhorrent that on my phone...
I agree. How can you not uninstall those?
It's not letting you, either with an uninstaller application or through the manage...
So if you go into settings and manage applications, now you might have to force close it. Well, let me try. I've got Skype installed. I mean, I don't think that that's certainly not how it's supposed to be. Let me go in here and uninstall Skype on my... this is a Nexus S. It's a different phone. Now, if they are preloaded apps from Verizon, of course you can't uninstall them. Were these preloaded or something you downloaded?
Loaded in with the system update.
Oh, okay, that's why. That's not the phone, that's not Android, that you can thank Verizon for that.
Well, yeah, exactly, but it's my phone. If I don't want...
I agree. So here's what you do. You root it.
Okay, how do you do that?
Well, it's different for every phone. If you Google root Incredible, you'll find it. On some phones, it's very easy. In fact, you know, there's so much. It's funny how much anti-Android sentiment there is. And I suspect it's from people who just love the iPhone so much, they just want to shoot at the Android. But I read an article that said, this is a security hole on the Nexus and other Android phones. You can root them, which means it gives you full control of the phone. Okay. Google's response was, we designed it to be rooted. What are you talking about? Unless somebody's sophisticated enough to figure out how to do it, they can't do it. But if they are smart enough to root it, they should be able to, because they said the same thing you just said. It's my phone, and I want full control of it. So if you root your Incredible, you could do anything you want, including delete the carrier applications.
Okay. All right. Thank you. This has been killing me for a number of months now.
So what you should understand, and, you know, this is a message for everybody, rooting means you're operating as an administrative user. You're a super user. You have root access. So it's a Unix operating system. Android's based on Unix.
Right.
When you have, if you've used Linux, if you used Macintosh, when you have root access, the sky's the limit. You are now in total control, including you could erase your entire phone contents with a simple command. So it would behoove one to only use root carefully and to not operate as root all the time. Rooting your phone just gives you the capability to do those things you want, including uninstall stuff that you don't want, and override Verizon's, I think, very annoying, I agree with you, very annoying predilection. It's one of the reasons I like the Nexus S, is even though it's on T-Mobile, Google, this is a pure, what they call a pure Google experience. There's no extra cruft on here. I call it cruft. And you don't have to do that. But you can easily, by the way, one-line command to root the Nexus X. Google even published it. They said, of course you can root it. We want you to root it. If you know enough to root it, root it. XDA-developers.com, the chat room tells me, is where you go to find out about this. XDA-developers.com. XDA is a rooting program. It's very easy to do.
Thank you, Leo, and have a happy tech year.
Thank you, Ken. You too. This is what this show is about, by the way, is empowering you as a user. I think a lot of times people who cover technology It's the same thing with people who cover government. They get co-opted by the people they cover, in effect. They become your friends. The companies become your friends. You get free stuff from them. So pretty soon it's very hard for you to say things that the companies don't like. Not because you owe them, but because they're friends. You don't want to hurt their feelings, whatever. And I think that that's a disservice. I have always said to my, this is my motto, is I'm here, I'm a user myself. I represent users. I do not represent the companies. I have no love for any of them. I make a point of not making friends with them. I don't take free stuff from them. I buy all the phones you're looking at. I've purchased with my own hard-earned dollars. And I have accounts with T-Mobile or Verizon, AT&T, and Sprint, as expensive as that is, because that's how I can look at these phones and not feel beholden to these companies. So I'm on your side. Root it. I've got no love for Verizon or Samsung or anybody else. HTC. We bought them. These are our tools. We get to do what we want with them. Period. Now, let me take a break. When we come back, we have so many great calls. Coming up in just a bit, Donald in Carpinteria, California. He's looking for an audio USB interface for a microphone. Wayne in Irvine wants to talk about Waze. It is a scam, but I'll tell you how to avoid it. There are a lot of scams out, especially in the holiday season. Before we do that, though, I have a brand new ESET product to talk to you about. You know, I talk about Nod 32, that great antivirus from ESET, ESET.com. They've now done a Mac product. Now, for years, I've said you don't need an antivirus on the Mac. And certainly, you still don't. There's still not big issues out there. But we're starting to see an increase of security holes, a lot of patching. It's only a matter of time, and I think it's time to start considering security on your Mac. It's always been time, let's face it. The world-famous lightweight computer protection I've been talking about for years is now available on the Mac, and they did a Mac-specific app. But it has the same heuristics engine, but a complete Mac-friendly interface. Apple's selling it in their stores nationwide. That should tell you something. Of course, Micro Center and Fry's have it. It proactively detects bad things as they happen before they hit you. So you'll notice there are not a lot of, there are frankly not a lot of viruses on the Mac, and there are not a lot of antivirus definitions coming down. But what happens is there are things called spear phishing attacks, where people know that a company uses this platform, and so they send you attacks designed for that company. That's the kind of thing Nod 32 can stop cold. ESET Cybersecurity for the Mac also adds something I think is really good, a brand new and complementary educational component alongside its renowned protection. That's the most important thing. You've heard me say that before. It's your behavior that's the most important. And because it's ESET, it's protection that you won't even notice is running. It just does it silently in the background. I've been putting it on my Mac, and it's great. But you don't have to take my word for it. You can try it free for 30 days. Go to ESET.com/Mac and give it a free test drive. ESET.com/Mac, the new cybersecurity for Macintosh, only from ESET. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back to the phones we go. Donald, Carpinteria, California. Hey, Donald, Leo Laporte.
Hey, Leo, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Hey, can I plug my show?
Yeah, you have a show? Yeah, tell me about it.
I do. It's the Takuno Podcast. We talk about anime, Japanese animation.
Oh, we've talked before. Yes,
yeah,
of course.
We just recorded our 2010 year in review anime style. I'll be putting it out this week. And next weekend, there's a convention, Anime Los Angeles, at the LAX Marriott. And I'll be giving two presentations, one on how to start up your own anime podcast and one on how to take better convention photography.
That's one of the things I love about this culture, is that we give it away. We're not in competition. Start your own podcast. Here's how.
Yeah.
You want to be a better photographer? Here's how.
Yeah, it's definitely a pay it forward kind of thing for me.
For all of us, first of all, the business is small, so it's not like we're going to lose any business. And if you love this stuff, of course you want to spread it. OTAKUNOPODCAST.com. Otaku? No. What is otaku?
It's basically fanboy.
It's a Japanese fanboy.
Right.
And they tend to like manga, anime,
right,
other things as well.
Exactly, yes. Technology.
Donald, hang on the line, because I want to answer your question about audio interfaces in just a bit, but I'm glad we could get the plug in. Otakunopodcast.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, talking about computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, all the gadgets and gizmos, home theater, the stuff that fills our lives. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. Had a great time during the break with the chat room. If you've not been in our chat room, do go to techguylabs.com. That's the website. Show notes are there, previous episodes, going all the way back to the very first episodes of the Tech Guy in 2004. This is my 7th anniversary. TechGuyLabs.com. But the thing I'd like you to look at today is the chat link. Click that and you'll go into the chat room. About 600 people in there. It's a good time to go because it's quiet. Because it's New Year's Day. Happy New Year, by the way. But I love having them there. Not only because they help me. they're my brains. But also because they ask interesting questions. We've kind of had an interesting dialogue over the last few minutes of what were the top five products of 2010. And of course, when you limit it to five, it's very tough. Very tough. And so I really had to think and process. Now, these are products released in 2010. So obviously there are other products I love. My Canon camera, my 5D Mark II, is like my baby, but it's several years old, so that doesn't count. I'll give you the top five, in my opinion, top five products of 2010. We'll start with number five. We'll go up. And I'd love to hear what you think, what you would put on this list, what you would take off the list. Number five, Microsoft Kinect. Came out last month. I think revolutionizes gaming. It is very fun. It makes it accessible to anybody. I was playing Dance Central again this week, and it's just so much fun. But I think more than just fun, I mean, you could say the Nintendo Wii fun, yeah. More than just fun, it's in the long run a very interesting platform, a fairly inexpensive way for a computer to do face recognition, body recognition, and I think the applications we're seeing already, and we'll see more of for the Kinect, really show it to be more than just a gaming thing. So I'm going to put Kinect on that list. Number four on that list, I think, maybe even should be rated higher. Just depends. But for me personally, the Kindle 3, the new Kindle, partly because it's $139, the Wi-Fi only version. And for most of us, that's plenty. You don't need the 3G. $139, lightweight, very readable. It, for a lot of people I know, it got them reading again. So I have to say, number four, Kindle 3, if that's not confusing. My number three product of the year, not number one, and I think on a lot of lists, Apple's iPad made number one, but mine, it's only number three. I am blown away by the iPad. I think it's an amazing device. I love it. But as I've had it now for 6 months or seven, whatever it is, I find I use it less and less. I use it primarily, believe it or not, for gaming. I think the Kindle's better for reading. If you can only get one device, I think the iPad is the one that does everything, right? So, but I'm in the fortunate position of having a variety of toys in my possession. Gosh, I love my job. So I'm going to put this number three. You'd think it would rank higher, but no. I think for me, and again, this is a personal list. This isn't. How could any one person say globally, "Oh, this is the best thing"? This is what I think, for me, and my usage, and the way I approach it. This is the number three device. Number two, and a dark horse that came out of nowhere, because it's only 2 weeks old. If you'd asked me last month, I would have probably said the Droid X. I do love Android. There's some very good Android products out there. I think the Galaxy S Tab is a definite runner-up. Definitely should be in the top 10. But and the Droid X was great until I got the Google Nexus S. And then, now, this is from Samsung. I love the AMOLED screen. It's a little smaller than the Droid X, and I think that's not so bad. It's still 4 inches. It's still a lot of screen real estate. It's running the latest version of Android 2.3, which is very snappy. Snappier, in fact, than 2.2. I live on this phone, and I have to say, I know I've only had it 2 weeks, and sometimes you have to be careful with gadgets. If you've only known them for a short time, sometimes they're, you know, like people, their appeal wanes. As you get to know them, like that's very frequently the case, isn't it? But I think this Galaxy S, or Nexus S, I should say, will stay on the list. So that's, believe it or not, number two. And number one, and I don't feel I have to justify this at all. I think Apple did a brilliant job. The MacBook Air 11-inch at $1,000, which is expensive for a netbook, but not expensive for a laptop. At $1,000, I think it is an amazing product, which I find I use all the time. Yes, it's a small screen, but big enough. Very lightweight. Great battery life. I know many people would put an iPad on the top of the list, and the MacBook Air maybe number two. I think for a lot of people, the Nexus S would not appear on the list. This is my personal list. Number one, MacBook Air. Number two, Nexus S. Number three, iPad. Number four, Kindle 3. And number five, the Microsoft Kinect. What are your top five products of 2010? Maybe later in the show, we'll take a look at what might be coming down the pike, the stuff that I'm looking for that might make that list next year. Or I guess it would be this year, wouldn't it? Yeah, I know, $1,000 is expensive for a laptop, but not a good laptop. I know you can get a decent laptop for $600 or $700, but I think if you put it side by side with the Air is worth the extra few hundred dollars. Absolutely. 8888, last Leo, am I wrong? Tell me. Let's get back to Donald in Carpinteria, California. We were talking about his Otaku No podcast. And let's give you another plug, Anime Los Angeles, which is coming up Friday through Sunday of this week. I will not be there. I'll be in Vegas for CES. You're going to be at the Airport Marriott in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a great event, though.
It's fun. It's a very low-key. It's great for new fans or people curious. You know, it's very fun, friendly, non-threatening atmosphere.
Well, and, you know, I love these kinds of events where it's people who are really passionate about something.
Absolutely.
And it's just fun to get together, especially if you share the passion, to get together with them and just spend time with them. And it doesn't need to be, 185,000 people in Vegas. No one can possibly really enjoy that for very long.
Right.
That's just grueling. But a small few thousand people passionate about a single thing, whether it's Pez dispensers or Otaku or whatever, that's fun.
It is. Absolutely.
So your podcast is doing well. Congratulations. That's wonderful.
I'm having a lot of fun with it.
You've done how many? 15 episodes, it looks like?
About that, yeah.
And you feel like people are taking to it? How have you publicized it?
Let's see, I'm on Twitter and Facebook, and of course I've come on a certain radio program one or two times.
You know, I don't mind. People often say, why do you let people plug stuff? I love that. What? That's great. This is how we have to share, right? This is our community. Let's share.
And I've been going to anime conventions and spreading the word.
Bingo. That's it. You got to go. First of all, people will say, well, I want to do a blog or a podcast or whatever. I want to create something. I say, what should I do? I say, the first thing to do is make sure it's something you love, because the passion will carry you through the rough times, the lean times, the tough times. And two, then to publicize it, go where other people who share your passion are.
Right.
Anime trade shows. So quickly, because I'm again running out of time, Donald, what can I do for you?
So I finally decided to get move up from a USB mic, and I got myself the Heil PR40.
It's
beauty.
That's my mic. I love this.
It's a Leo mic, yes. So I want to make sure, I'm trying to, I don't think I'm quite ready to go to the full-on mixer yet. So right now I'm just looking for a decent USB audio interface.
Oh, yeah.
Good mic.
Quite a few. You could spend $700 and get a really top-of-the-line one. I'll talk about that in a moment. But I would go and Shure makes it something. It's just like a mic plug extender. I think it's called the SC2 or something like that. I'll look up the product number. But it's inexpensive, and it does a great job, and it's very simple, and it's all you need.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Donald. Congratulations. Have fun next weekend. I'll give you the number, product number, when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The tech guy. Happy New Year to you. First show 2011. And if you count the decades properly, first show of the new decade. It's very confusing, but the decade doesn't begin till 2001, and so this is the Though I only mention it because the people who listen to this show, some of them, are very persnickety about these kinds of things. It just goes with the territory and technology. Wayne, Irvine, California, thanks for being so patient. Hi, Wayne. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Happy New Year to you, Leo.
Happy New Year, Wayne.
I heard you using my name in vain a few minutes ago.
Yeah, a few minutes ago. Like half an hour ago.
You said the interest in the Galaxy X was waning.
Yeah, well, the Galaxy Tab. No, I didn't say it was waning. I mean the Droid X, Yeah, and the only thing reason I don't like the Droid X as much as the Nexus S is, I'll give you a couple of reasons. One is the stupid Motorola blur. And Samsung does this, HTC does this, Motorola does this, everybody who makes Android phones feels for some reason compelled to add their own user interface elements and applications on top of it. In most cases, unless you root the device, you can't remove them. And then the carriers pile on. And so on the Droid X, Verizon puts all these VCast applications on there, none of which I want. So, it's still a great phone. I ding it for that. It actually has better battery life than the Nexus S. I'm very disappointed with the battery life on the Nexus S. It just barely gets through a day, squeaks through a day. However...
The question I have for you is this. My mother called and asked about something I didn't know about, so I figured you'd be the person to ask. She had a question about some internet buying sites, which seem kind of bogus. One
yes.
is called Wavy. The other one is called Swizzy. And wondering...
I'm willing to bet, based on those names, it's the same people doing both. W-A-V... Yeah, W-A-V-E-E?
S-A-V... excuse me. W-A-V-E-E, and the other one is S-W-I-Z-Z-I-E.
Yeah. And so what do they promise you?
You can buy, here's the advertising, an iPad was sold for $31. And
no way.
Was
Are these new products or used products?
They claim to be new, and they have these people here that they said were great, and I'm telling my mother, hey, anybody can write anything you want to online and post anybody's picture, and it's all bogus.
Let me ask the chat room. Anybody have experience with these sites? But I can tell you right on the face of it, no way.
Yeah.
First of all, Apple tightly controls its channel. So if they are selling iPads, they're selling it as a gray market device.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a scam, period. I don't think that, you know, so it's auction-based, right?
Yeah. Are they trying to capture your name or email address and spam you, or I don't know what the deal is?
I don't know. I mean, it could be as bad as they take your money and don't sell you a product.
Yeah.
You know, they've got all the things at the bottom, but, you know, anybody could put these. Trustee, verified, VeriSign, trusted, authorized.net, online payment service.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, all of these, you go to Trustee, for example, and pay them money for that badge.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't think having that badge necessarily means much. Wavy and the Waze logo registered or common law service marks of Wavy International Holdings. I would look at who is Wavy International. Well, first of all, if they hadn't put the iPad on there, I might have believed it. But the minute I see an Apple device being sold and they have Nanos on here, at below list, I know that they're not a Apple authorized Apple dealer. So I don't know what the racket is, but let me see. I'm going to click how it works. Maybe they'll say if it's used, maybe. Oh, by the way, I'm being told now you pay before you can bid. You have to give them money.
Mm.
Is that right?
Are they trying to capture your credit card or what?
Well, they get your money, and then you never get anything that. So you register, you buy credits,
mm-hmm.
then you look for the item.
Ah, okay.
So they've got your money. And by the way, these credits, non-refundable.
Mm-hmm.
So they got your money, right? They got your money. And I think that that's probably, I would suspect, what happens most often. These guys avoid the label of scam in many cases by actually somebody getting something.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody might have gotten a $3 iPad, but there may also be 1,000 people who gave them non-refundable cash and never got anything.
Right.
So So I would check, you know, I don't know anything about them, so I'm not going to say for sure that it is. It smells a little suspicious. I would check, you know, there's a electronic BBB, the Better Business Bureau has an online division. I'd check with them. Here's the beauty of the internet world. Yes, more of this kind of stuff surfaces, and you're exposed to more of this kind of stuff, but you could do a simple Google search and see what others have said about it. And that's what I would do.
Now, the Google search, how do you know it's not something planted by the website?
Ah, you don't. So you have to look at more than one site. You have to use your critical thinking. This is what we got to be teaching kids these days in school, is how to look at something and smell a problem. Mm-hmm. And you did, obviously. You wouldn't be calling. You said, wait a minute, Mom, somebody got an iPad for how much? No, that can't be right.
Yeah, it's suspicious.
That can't be right. And the very fact that they want money before you can do anything, to me, look, let's face it. If you're buying the hottest consumer electronics devices out there, and the iPad is probably number one, mm-hmm. And Apple, it controls the channel very tightly. No one, from Amazon to Mac sales to anybody, can sell an Apple product for more than a few percentage points off list. And if they do that, they're eating the difference. So there's never any markdown on Apple products. Unless you buy it at Apple's outlet store, or, you know, it's an old product that Apple has officially lowered the prices on. You just don't get deals. So anytime you see a deal that is that good on an Apple product, you know there's something's up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, you know, and I don't know this company, so I can't say for sure what's going on. It seems a little odd.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If it's too good to be true, it probably is, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly right.
Yeah. Thank you for the heads up, Wayne, on that one. And you're right. That's a big one. Okay, so I'm going to Google the name. But you can't just say, oh, look, here's a bunch of articles saying, hey, great deal. I got a great deal on this. You got to be suspicious. And that's not just true. It's interesting. It's not just true on a Google web search. Even if you look at a site like Yelp. I love Yelp. Yelp.com is a site where people review products and services and stores and restaurants. But and same thing with the reviews on Amazon or anywhere else. You kind of have to scratch off the top one and the bottom one. There's always somebody who hates everything, or maybe it's a competitor. Maybe it's the guy across the street who says, I hate this restaurant, it's terrible. And there's always going to be one that says, this is the best thing I ever had. Cross that one off too, and get a sense. You can get a sense if you read all the reviews, TripAdvisor, Yelp, you can get a sense. And Amazon, read all the reviews and kind of aggregate them all in your head, and I always kind of mentally throw out the best and the worst. And what you want is a review that's detailed, that says, well, you know, this company did this and this, and then they didn't do that, and that's what you're looking for. But you have to do it with a critical eye. You can't just, same thing with eBay sellers. That's a big, those reviews there, those are, be very careful with those. Thanks for the call. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme, for high-speed internet at an amazing price. Call 866 the number 2. Get that to get DSL Extreme. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. I forgot to mention the Shure device. It's more expensive than I thought. I'm a little disappointed. I think the list is around $155, although you can get it for less. This is a device that lets you use professional microphones like the one I'm using right now. A Heil Sound PR40. Professional mics have different connectors, and they need you can't just connect them to a computer. They need something that'll take the analog output of the microphone and turn it into digital, and it needs to have an XLR Canon connector on it. It may also need to provide phantom power for some mics, which is a little bit of juice coming back down the line. And this device from Shure I like a lot. Because it's compact, it also has audio monitoring, so you can hear the sound coming from the mic in real time and not delayed, as it would be if you were listening to the computer. Because it's you know, there's a few milliseconds of time it takes to convert the sound into bits. It's called the X2U. X2U, and it does a very good job. I think I've seen it with the Shure SM58 microphone in a package deal that was under $200, so I bet you can get it for better than $150. I think so. Lynn, Ventura, California, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. Taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I'm a new Mac user, and I got a good story for you. My husband bought this when I was away in Vancouver, British Columbia, visiting my parents. I come home, and there's this gorgeous new computer sitting on my desk.
Was that a pleasant surprise or an unpleasant surprise?
Well, it was a shocking surprise because,
yeah.
To be honest with you, I don't think of myself as a savvy computer user. There are things that I do really well, and other things that I tend to be a little afraid of technology. So I always tease about parts and pieces. I don't like them. And so my question to you today is that I've been doing all the accounting for years for us. And I was a Quicken user on Windows, and I love the interface. Quicken for Mac is different. And I'm a little frustrated with it. It's a little bit more of a laborious process.
I agree. Intuit, who makes the Quicken products, develops the Mac product completely separately from the Windows product. It's a different team.
Okay.
So it is a completely different program. You know, many companies like Microsoft, if you use Microsoft Office on your Mac, you'll say, oh, yeah, it's the same or close to the same. Actually, they have different development teams as well, but they attempt to keep them kind of in sync. Intuit doesn't really seem to care. So, unfortunately, you're right. I think the Mac version is at least a year behind in terms of capabilities, and it does look completely different.
Well, my question is what do you think of Mint?
I love Mint. Now, Intuit owns Mint, by the way.
Oh, they do?
Yeah. They bought them last year.
Oh, wow. So,
I love Mint. To me, is the most amazing thing because you don't do anything.
No, it's what. But what about the security?
It's completely safe.
Really?
It's completely safe. Now I'll tell you why. So let me explain what Mint is for people who are saying, "What is Mint? I want to know." It sounds like it's MINT.com, like the U.S. Mint, but not the U.S. Mint. It's a privately held company. And what you do is you say, "Here's my bank account. Here's my credit card account. Here's my mortgage account. Here are all of the things that I have in the world." And it does kind of what Quicken does when you do it manually. It does everything. It downloads all the transactions. It tells you what your net worth is. It'll do budgeting automatically for you, or you can do it manually. And you never enter anything because it's getting the data in real time from the bank. Every day it gets the data. It doesn't wait till the end of the month or the end of the statement comes. It's got it always. So you know exactly what your balances are. You can go through your accounts, see what you spent money on. It takes a little tweaking to make sure all the categories are right on all the entries, but it learns and it does a great job. So you're right. And when I first saw Mint, I started signing up and I said, "Whoa, I'm not." And so you were right to be nervous.
Oh.
Whoa, it wants my bank account login? No, I'm not stupid.
Yeah.
But here's the funny thing: it uses. They don't do all of that themselves. They get the data from a third party that I think it's, I can never remember the name, Yodlee or something. It's got a funny name.
Okay.
That is the same exact company your bank uses. In other words, the company that is getting this information already has it.
Oh, really? Okay.
So they're using a third party service that all the banks, all the credit card companies use to, you know, facilitate transactions. This company has all your financial data already. You're not giving this data to Mint. Mint doesn't store the data. This third party does. And you don't have to worry about Mint's security. And, man, it is great. You may never have to use Quicken again.
Well, that would be amazing, because I double task with Quitten, because I do pay everything online through, I have Bank of America, so I put everything through their site, which is great, and I feel okay about the security. I guess the other question I have is, how do you back up Mint?
You don't.
So you don't keep a hard copy? You don't?
No, you don't have to do any. Mint's perfect for an idiot like me. You're much more savvy and proactive than I am. I love Mint because I don't have to do anything.
Okay.
I give them my account numbers, and I have it on my phone, too, by the way, if you have a smartphone.
Well,
the Mint application.
And actually, I was my family in Canada again, and he was checking how much I was spending, because Mint sent him a message saying, you have a credit card that's being utilized in Canada.
Yes, yes. You get text messages. Every day I get a text message saying what my balances are. If I can set limits, I could say, I don't want to spend more than $500 in any given month on groceries, and it will tell me when I do.
Oh, wow. This is really great. Okay. Well, you know, there's this whole thing about the cloud. I'm a little afraid about being in the cloud somewhere.
You are right. In this case, Mint backs it up for you. You don't have to worry about it. I guess they could lose data if there were a catastrophic event. At this point, I wouldn't worry so much about it.
They've
been around for years. They use Yodlee, and Yodlee already knows all that information.
Okay.
So you're not giving them anything that they don't already have. Mint does not store that information. Yodlee does. So the way it works is Mint, when it's updating your data, goes to Yodlee and says, give me the data. It doesn't have your password, doesn't have your logins, doesn't have any of that stuff.
Okay, great. I'm going to use it. I also love the way it looks. And when I do all my tax preparation at the end of the year, it just was fabulous. And I can teach it to categorize. I mean, I already have...
It does a pretty good job out of the box. It knows Starbucks is coffee.
Yeah.
It knows Kohl's is department store. It's just it's the oddball stuff that you go to, your local place that it may not know about, but you can teach it that. It's better than Quicken in that regard.
Yeah, well, yes. I was so impressed, but it scared me. So I really
appreciate it. Mm-hmm. It scared me, too, and in fact, it took a year to sign up for it because I was so scared of it. And then a friend of mine, Gina Trapani, who created the Lifehacker site and is the queen of productivity, did the research for me and told me, oh, no, it's using Yodlee. It's absolutely safe. Now, people say, well, why is it free? It's free because, and you've already seen this, it will look at your loans and say, hey, you could get a better deal from XYZ. And they get a commission from XYZ. So they've got it monetized completely, very successfully. They're a very, very, very successful company.
Well, I'm going to embrace it. I think it's great. I'm going to start the new year with it. Thank you so much.
I would not hesitate to do so, Lynn. It's what I use.
Okay. Thank you so much. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Lynn. Enjoy your new Mac. And now that you know the way, if you have any questions, you just call me, okay?
Perfect.
I'll be here for you. I think you're going to like that, Mac. You're right. It's funny. You immediately went to the one area where Macs are way behind, which is business. In my front office, it's all PCs because my business people want to use QuickBooks, and that's the only way to do it. But the rest of my life, I got the Macs. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Happy New Year, everybody, and let's especially say Happy New Year to Mad Magazine's maddest writer, Dick DiBartolo, our gadget hound, the Gizwiz, we call him. Hey, Dick!
Leo, how you doing? Happy New Year! Did you see me on Times Square? I was waving!
No, you didn't. I mean, Dick lives in Manhattan, but I would guess nobody who lives in Manhattan goes to Times Square. I mean, that's...
No.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, that's
when
horrible.
When I was a kid, I did. But then you learn. As you get older, you learn that you did stupid things when you were young.
I tried one year, not so long ago. In fact, I think we came to visit you that year. It was 3 or 4 years ago. I was with the kids. And we made the mistake of not trying to go to Times Square until about 3 or 4 in the afternoon. You know, we figured, well, it's midnight. We don't have to go that early. We couldn't get within 20 blocks of the place.
Yes. Yes, there was a lady there who said, I got a good view this time, but I've been standing here for 16 hours. So
Yeah. It's crazy.
And you can't go to the bathroom, so bring a bag.
They pen you in.
They pen you in, exactly.
Anyway.
It's what we do to the audience to make them stay for these spots.
It works.
It works.
Everybody stay here. No bathroom breaks for you. So let me ask you, what do you do for New Year's Eve if you live in Manhattan and you're not going to Times Square?
I walk up to Central Park West and I watch the fireworks. You don't even have to go into the park because, you know, everything's outdoors and you have a good view. Watch the fireworks for about 15 minutes and then walk home and then watch Channel 7, you know, rewind and pretend it's New Year again and watch the ball
drop. Yeah,
because
they do it for the West Coast.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And just stand there the whole time saying, thank God I didn't go. Thank God I didn't go.
I went to bed at 10:30, but I celebrated your New Year's Eve.
Oh, my word.
Yeah. Oh, I can't believe it.
I
don't stay up. I'm old.
Now, come on.
I'm old. I don't need that. And
that
besides,
kind of thinking will make you old.
And what happens at midnight? You bang a few pots, you shoot a few firearms in the air, and you go to bed.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
No, I'm just joking. Do not shoot firearms. I guess it's too late. I'll wait till December 30th, and I'll remind you. Do not shoot firearms in the air, because you know what? Whatever goes up must come
down.
Yeah, and you don't know where it's going to come down. So what? Every week, Dick, I should say, we do a podcast together, Dick and I, called The Daily Gizwiz, Monday through Friday. It's a gadget a day, and usually they're not the. Sometimes they're iPods.
You know, I see the new year is not different than the old year. I was hoping it would be.
No, it's usually junk. It's usually junk. So what do you got for us this year?
All right, so this piece of junk, I happen to get four or five thank you emails for. Suggesting the A gloves. It's cold. So if you have a touchscreen device, you know, the gloves you showed had a hole in the tip where you put your finger out.
And they were
so
expensive.
You only would have frostbite on one finger.
Right, the little tip of your finger. Yeah.
And they were $50. So the A gloves are $18, and they have little silver slivers in them, which are conductive. So with your gloves on, you can use any touchscreen device. So your iPod, your iPad, you're out there in the cold. They're very thin, so you can also, it's easy to type with them. If it goes below freezing, you'd want to use these as liners. But as I said, a couple of people really did write and say, these things really work great. And they were only $18. So they're A-Gloves, A-G-L-O-V-E-S.com. $18. They only come in one style, one color. So just pick your size and you're set to go.
The capacitance touch screens in the iPod Touch, the iPhone, and most devices, Android phones now, require, it's not like they're old resistive touch screens where you could use a stick. You could use anything. They require something that conducts electricity, of all things. To sense the finger. And so that's why you can't just wear regular gloves. You have to have conductive gloves.
Exactly. And AG, they call them A gloves with the AG in bold because AG is the symbol
of the silver. So can you see the silver? I mean, does it look like it's
sparkling? You can see the little specks. I keep mine in a safe deposit box just in case they increase the value.
I love it. AG is the symbol for silver. AG loves.
Exactly.
I like it. Dick is at gizwiz.biz, where he does a lot of fun things. If nothing else, notes for this and all of his other gadgets are there.
Exactly. Yeah.
But you also have the What the Heck Is It contest.
Which is a brand new one up there. So go to gizwiz.biz and click on the What the Heck Is It link. And later when we do the Daily Gizwiz, I'll explain. I made last month's gizmo. Actually, a pick of the day.
And, what is this? That is weird. So I'm looking at it.
That's the new gadget.
Oh, I know what it is. That's a model of the Sky Needle in Seattle. It's a little...
I cannot say a thing.
Tiny model of... Anyway, what do you think it is? If you guess correctly, the 12 people who guess correctly get Mad Magazine's autographed by Dick, Mad Magazine's maddest writer. But 24 people get...
get it, who do the wrong answers but do it cleverly.
Yeah, we like wrong, funny, silly answers, and people are crazy.
It's the most upside down contest ever.
Yeah, exactly.
More people win for being wrong than for being right.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the Mad Magazine takeoff on Monopoly. When you go bankrupt, you're the winner.
Hey, great to talk to you, Dick. We'll see you on the Daily Gizwiz podcast. If you want to listen to that show, that is Monday through Friday at, you can get it on iTunes, or just go to twit.tv. That's my podcast site, and click the Daily Gizwiz link on the left there. But I think we might have time for a couple more questions. Bill was on the line, I think, when I went to him, but let's try again. Bill, are you there from Mission Viejo?
Here.
Yay! Hi, Bill.
How are you? I've got a little bit of Alzheimer's going on in my computer. I'm not sure exactly what it's going to do, but what's happening is if I turn off my computer and I turn it back on, it creates a new profile, a new desktop, as if...
Oy.
It's all been lost, but the good news is the long-term memory is all there. I've got all the files. They're just stuck in a different profile, and I've got like a half a dozen different temporary profiles that have been created, but what I really want to do is get back to the original profile and make that the default again.
Yeah, and really what we want to do is fix this because that's not right.
Exactly.
And so that's interesting. So it creates a new user every single time you log in?
Yeah, I'm not even logging in. I don't have it set up for a username and password. I just turn it on, and it says creating new desktop, and it goes through the process as if it's the first time I've ever turned it.
Oh, boy.
And then it comes up with a brand new fresh desktop, and I thought, well, okay, you know, I'll just go through and recreate my Outlook account and a couple other things.
Oh, don't do that. Yeah. Oh, gosh. Yeah. Besides, eventually you'll use up space because you'll use up the drive because you use up a big bunch of space every time you do that.
Exactly.
First thing I do is turn off the automatic login.
Okay.
And so when you get in there, you want to, it's hidden. Which version of Windows are you using?
Vista.
Okay. So you're going to type this command, get ready.
Okay.
You're going to click Start.
Yep.
And let me just get it right. You're going to click Start, and then you're going to get a little window that you type in Control. Let's see. I think it's CTRL. I have to do it, actually, as I do this so I can make sure I give you the right thing. CTRL space user. Now, chat room, correct me if I'm wrong on this. I think user control 2, but I'm not sure. You said which version of Windows?
Vista.
Vista, yeah. It doesn't have it in the control panel. It's a hidden control panel. So you type CTRL. I think it's user password 2, I think. But what will happen is you'll get it's passwords 2, just passwords 2. Okay, CTRL. Passwords too. You'll get an unusual control panel you've never seen, and it has a checkbox that turns off the automatic login. And you want to turn that off and then see what happens. Hopefully what will happen is you'll see a whole list of former profiles that were created, but you'll see your original. Log into the original. Delete the other ones. So it's control. I've got to get this right so that you, because I'm seeing different things from my chat room, and I believe this is right. Control, one word, space, user, passwords 2, the number 2, all one word. So it's two words, control, user, passwords 2. I'll put a link also to a Microsoft Knowledge Base article on this subject that might have a fix for you for the long run. But I suspect this is something that will go away if you turn off the auto login. Now, how do you fix it if you want to have auto login? I don't know. A temporary profile is loaded after you log on to a Windows Vista-based system. Yeah, this looks right. This is Knowledge Base Article 947-242. We'll put that in the show notes at techguylabs.com. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great week. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye. good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, and it's time to talk about computers and the internet and the cell phones and the camcorders and the MP3 players and the home theater and all that stuff. 8888 Ask Leo is my number. Brand new year, brand new decade. How are you? Good to see you. I hope you had a great holiday. And let's get going for 2011. Happy New Year. Have some fun. 888-827-5536. That is the phone number, 8888-ASK-LEO. We have a website, techguylabs.com, as well. Coming up at 48 after the hour, my friend Dick DiBartolo, the Gizwiz from Mad Magazine, with a crazy gadget. Beginning our new year with a crazy gadget. And a programming note, next week at this time, I will be broadcasting from Las Vegas at the Consumer Electronics Show, which is the biggest trade show of the year in the computer and tech industry. All the new stuff is announced there, sometimes stuff that won't be out for months. And so it's a great way to see what's new, what's exciting, what's changed, what you might be buying this time next year. It's always a lot of fun. So tune in next weekend for the live broadcast from CES. All of our experts from my podcast network will be on with us. And Scott Wilkinson will spend a lot of time with us, too, talking about the new TVs, the new surround sound. If you're in the market for any of this stuff, if you didn't get what you wanted under the tree, or under the Hanukkah bush, then listen next week for all the stuff you will want. David, Redondo Beach, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Happy anniversary and happy new year to everybody in the Tech Guy Nation.
Thank you.
You're welcome, sir. I purchased Microsoft Office Home and Student 2010 and installed it successfully on two out of the three laptops that I have. Two that were successful were Windows 7's 32-bit processors, but the one I'm having problems on is Vista 64, and I'm getting an error code, 1719.
Hmm.
I wanted to ask you if you had any tips on this.
I mean, Microsoft wants you to be using 64-bit Windows 7. It may be that there are issues with 64-bit Windows Vista. Vista really... I don't know.
Has all kinds of issues with Vista.
It says 64-bit, right, on it?
It's on the disk I got. I didn't get the download version. And it says it's compatible. But what it says is Windows installer service could not be accessed. This can occur when Windows installer is not installed.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that before. I think you need to update, believe it or not, your Windows installer. You'd think that the program disk would have the Windows installer on it, but it does require components in the operating system that it doesn't have. And I have seen that before, and you do need to update your Windows installer.
I tried to do that, but with no success.
No success.
Is there a version of Windows installer I should be looking for?
Are you, well, let me ask, which service pack of Vista are you running? Are you up to date on your service packs?
Yeah, I'm at least at service pack 1, but I'll have to double check that.
You need to be at 3.
Okay, I'll double check it. But I do the downloads all the time, so
yeah, sometimes on a big service pack, that's not automatic.
Okay, I'll make sure I'm at service pack 3.
Yeah. Let me just look at the chat room. Sierra in the chat room has sent me to a tech note. Error 1719 installing Office 10. This is the Microsoft Office site. And let me see what the answers are. The error is related to, yes, Windows installer. We can, so I'll tell you what, this is, by the way, from Sally Tang, the answer, who is a moderator for Microsoft. This is at TechNet, Microsoft's technical support site, technet.microsoft.com. And she has two steps, which are ridiculous in length.
Okay.
One is to right-click Windows installer. It's in your services on Vista, so you'll... I think the easiest way to get to this would be right-click My Computer, select Manage, go to the Services on the left, and then find the Windows Installer service, right-click it, select Properties, disable it.
Okay.
Or wait a minute, let me read that carefully. Startup type is set to... set it to manual, I apologize. Set it to manual. So this is step one, is to set it in the Windows Services. There's a Windows Installer service that has to be set to manual, not disable. That, I think, probably is the case, but just it's something to check. Step two, I'm sorry, I'm not going to try not to laugh here. unregister and re-register the Windows installer by, you have to run a program called MSI Exec.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
And you have to do it. Yes, that's my reaction as well. I'll put a link. I will put a link in the show notes to this article. Thank you, Sarah, for passing it along.
That would be helpful.
And it does sound like that's a start. However, the person who asked this question said that didn't fix it. So Sally comes back with another step and another step after that.
Got to be happening to more people than just me, I would assume.
Yeah. Finally, she did get it working for the person who asked the original question. But it took four different things. This is not uncommon. And it's, you know, very frustrating, but I don't know what the workaround is for this. It shouldn't be this hard, should it?
No, and it all goes back to installer. It's basically what we're...
Yes. Yeah, the error you're getting is saying either this is the wrong kind of installer or your installer's not up to date. By the way, Service Pack 2, not Service Pack 3, I apologize. Service Pack 2 is the latest for Vista. They have beta tested Service Pack 3, but they haven't released it yet. I do think that that's going to fix it. It's just getting that installer working. And, you know, really, Vista is not a happy, as you can see, is not a happy version of Windows.
Now, should I just update to Windows 7 and just be free of Vista?
I would.
Okay.
One of the things that happens with Windows 7 is it's faster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know.
Windows 7 is Vista. It's just Vista done right.
Okay. And not any complications with the 64 as opposed to the 32 when I update to 7?
No. Well, I hesitate to say that. Microsoft wants everybody to go to 64-bit Windows. The only compelling reason is so that you can address more than 4 gigabytes of RAM. Most people don't have more than 4 gigabytes of RAM. The downside to 64-bit Windows is that there are compatibility issues with older hardware, sometimes with older software. The driver model is very different, so drivers have to be rewritten. And so in a nutshell, that's the pros and cons of 64. For most people, I think 32 is fine. Unless you have more than 4 gigs of RAM, 32 is fine. Eventually, we'll all go to 64. And, you know, this is always what happens when there's a big shift in how things are done. Old stuff breaks.
Mm-hmm.
However, Lou in the chat room says he's using, as you are, 64-bit Windows 7 with Office 2010, no problem. And you already have seen that with Windows 7. It's the Vista problem. And I think you can fix this. I put a link in the chat room. James DeRuvo, who takes our show notes, will put that link at techguylabs.com. This is episode 731. Go to that on the website, and there will be a link to that with the four steps that the Microsoft moderator recommended to the person who asked this question, and they solved it after the fourth step. They're all very geeky. They're all ridiculous. You shouldn't have to do any of this.
Well, my page is full of notes here.
So your choice is, yeah, you could upgrade to Windows 7. I think there's some benefits to that. It is, but there's a cost. Or you can at least try these fixes and see if it works. If Vista's working fine on that machine, you know, let's not, I mean, that's a lot of work to just install Office.
Yeah, correct. Well, thank you so much, Leo.
Great to talk to you. Thanks for calling. I'd love to say, oh, this is Microsoft's fault. You know, oh, Microsoft, but it's computers. I think people, you know whose fault it is? It's the tech industry for selling this to us as an easy, anybody can do it. Oh, no, computers, they're simple now. It's an appliance. It's a toaster. It's a microwave. And really, that's not telling the truth. It's no more easy to sit down and use a computer than it would be to sit down at a piano never having used it and play a concerto. There's stuff you got to learn. There's stuff you got to do. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo, that's my phone number. You want to talk about money, that's the place to go. money. Did I say money? I'm a little distracted by the chat room. We're talking about mint, yodely money in there. If you want to talk about tech, this is the place to go. You can talk about money, too, but I'm no Bob Brinker, I'll tell you that. Dee in Mariposa, California. You're next. Hi, Dee. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Happy New Year, Leo.
Happy New Year. Thank you.
I have an older all-in-one printer, and before I invest in another set of inks, I was wondering, if the scanner bulb goes, would I still be able to use it as a printer?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. You don't have the scanner, just bulb required for the scanner, that's all.
Okay. Thank you very much, and good luck with your new location.
Thank you, Dee. I really appreciate it. We're going to be moving studios later this year. Currently, the Tech Guy Labs is in a little cottage, little 100-year-old cottage. It's beautiful. I mean, I love it. If you've ever watched our live stream, you can watch it right now, live.twit.tv. Beautiful redwood paneling all around. It was built by a lumber baron at the turn of the last century, and everything's paneled. Even the ceiling is paneled. You can't see it, but it is. But, well, not in this room, but the next room over. But, we've outgrown it. I've got 12 employees now, and it's not for the radio show, but it's for the podcasts we do all week long at the Twit Network. We've just really expanded quite a bit, and so we've been looking at getting a little more room, having a little bit of a chance to breathe, and we found a place literally down the street. Same, it'll be the same street in the same small town, but we'll have something like 8,000 square feet of studio space, another 6,000 square feet of storage. We're going to have a lot of room, so I can build a nice big studio. But don't worry, it's still going to look just like this, because I'm going to build a set that looks just like this. The magic of television. Mike, San Bernardino, California. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
How you doing, sir? I appreciate you taking my call.
Thank you.
I've got iTunes on my computer. It's an older Sony Vaio Windows. And with the bad weather that we've had, my computer got slammed as far as power-wise.
Ooh.
Turned it back on, went to iTunes. I was going to download a movie. And over half of the information on iTunes on the Windows is lost. Now, I've got everything still on the iPod itself. But I assume when I go to upload the iPod to my computer to either put the songs back in or download something back to the iPod, it's going to wipe away the same problem that it has on the computer. It's going to lose all that information. Is there anything?
You're exactly right.
Do?
So don't stop.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Did you look on the hard drive to see if the files are there? There's a couple of. Here's what I suspect happened. When the power outage happened, if the hard drive was in the middle of writing data, it spewed, you know, junk across the hard drive and damaged some stuff. Now, you're lucky, because if it only damaged your music folder, you're in better shape than if it had damaged, you know, Windows system files. You wouldn't even be able to boot.
Exactly.
But don't assume that all the data is gone. It could easily have merely clobbered the catalog that says there's files here. It could have just clobbered the iTunes index. So what I would do is browse your hard drive first and see, are the music files really gone? Have you done that?
I have. Quite a few of them are gone.
Okay.
iTunes would not respond. I literally had to erase the iTunes and then re-download it. Of course, it knew who we were from the computer.
Good, good. But it didn't. You had to reload your library, and not everything reloaded.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds like, yeah. You know, and again, those files are probably still there, many of them. But it's good. You've got a backup. It happens to be your iPod.
Exactly.
So you're absolutely right. What you should not do at this point is sync that iPod, because what'll happen is it'll replace what's on there with what's on your hard drive, which is not what you want.
Right.
I have a feeling in the long run you're going to have some other issues with that machine, so just be kind of aware of it. At some point you might want to rebuild the machine, because it, you know, if it seems unlikely that it just hit that particular area.
Yeah,
but maybe it did. So my chat room is suggesting, and I always ask them because I can never remember. Apple does not let you copy stuff from the iPod. But, well, and the reason is it would be the world's greatest piracy device, right? You say, you lend your friend your iPod. Here, take everything you need. However, they don't... I think Apple has, like, kind of... They have two minds about this. On the one hand, the record industry won't let them make it easy to do. Because the record industry says, we're not going to, you know... Are you kidding? We're not going to let you sell our stuff if you make it easy to pirate it. On the other hand, Apple realizes that that's not an unreasonable thing to do. So they don't actually make it that hard. They just don't give you a way to do it. You have to go out and get a third-party program to do it, and there are lots of them. And so SharePod is one that the chat room recommends.
SharePod.
There's SharePod. There's one called Sonuti that is iTunes backwards. And there's a Windows version of that now.
Awesome.
There are other programs as well. They sent me a link to something from soft29.com called the iPod Music Extractor.
I think I've heard of
that. Yeah, so there are a few of these. And what will happen is you'll run these on your Windows machine, it'll say, and you'll plug in your iPod. iTunes will say, oh, do you want me to sync? And you say, no! Whatever you do, don't sync. If it starts syncing, you exit out of that immediately. The good news is the first part of syncing is backing up, so you don't have to worry about that so much. And then you'll run, with the iPod still connected, you'll run these programs. They'll see the iPod and say, oh, I see you have some files. Would you like me to copy them over? I would copy them over. I would make a backup of your music on an external hard drive or a CD or a DVD as quickly as you can so that you don't lose this music. If you've bought it on the iTunes Store, Apple, you know, you have to really twist their arm to get them to give it back to you. You can, but it's not easy.
Exactly. All right, so I will give
those three different programs.
I really do love the show. I appreciate all the information that we get from you guys. Good looking out, and thanks again.
Happy New Year, Mike. Thank you.
Right. Take care.
Bill, Mission Viejo, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Bill. I surprised Bill. I don't think he expected... Wait a minute, that's not Bill. I understand why I surprised you, Bill, because I didn't pick you up. Hi, Bill! My fault! What can I do for you, Bill? Now, I know I have Bill picked up. Bill, are you there? All right, I'm going to put everybody on hold, and we'll come back and answer more calls in just a little bit. It's all right, we got to take a break anyway. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number if you want to call me, if you've got a question, a comment, a suggestion. That's 888-827-5536. We've got a great website. James has been writing everything down as we talk. That's techguylabs.com. This is episode 731. This is, in fact, the 7th anniversary of the Tech Guy Show. That's why there's so many episodes. 731 episodes, 7 years. It's been a great 7 years. 8888-ASK-LEO. We'll be back in just a little bit. And don't forget, coming up at 48 after the hour. About 20 minutes from right now, Dick DiBartolo, the Giz Whiz, with his Gadget of the Week. Happy New Year, everybody! I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
Y'all still want me to come with you?
ZZ Top action with some help from Elvis. We're getting ready for CES next week. Everybody now singing. I'll tell you, Vegas during the Consumer Electronics Show, which is next week, is a very different town. 185,000 to 200,000 geeks descend upon this town. They take over every hotel room. They don't gamble as much, so they shut down tables. Although I have to say, that's changed. It used to be worse. During the big Comdex show, which was really a computer show, they would, you'd go to the casino and half the tables would be covered with tarpaulins. It was like, it was depressing. But I think the consumer electronics people gamble a little bit more. Let's face it. It's a gamble to make a product in the consumer electronics industry. So they must be gamblers. In any event, it's a very different. I wouldn't recommend going to Las Vegas when one of these big shows is in town, because it's just, you can't get a cab, you can't get anywhere, and the place is full of nerds. I can't wait. We'll be there. You don't have to go. We'll go. We'll do the coverage for you next weekend. And if you have time, actually our coverage on my Netcast network starts on Wednesday night. We go to one of the big parties where they show a lot of the gadgets ahead of time. And then Thursday night, I'll be doing another one. And then all day Friday. And then the radio show Saturday and Sunday. So we actually will be there for 4 or 5 days covering everything going on at the Consumer Electronics Show. Why is it worth doing that? Well, this is where you see the point of the CES show, frankly, from day one, was get the manufacturers all together in one place, and then the dealers, the Best Buy and the Circuit Cities, and I mean, there aren't as many as there used to be, but the stereo dealers all go to Vegas for this show. They get wined and dined, and they see the new products, and they decide what to order for next year, for this year, I guess, 2011 or later this year. This is, you know, a buying thing, and so, you know, it's not open to the public. We get to go as press. Because it's a great time to kind of cover all of this in one place. But most of the people there are actually electronics dealers. It's going to be very interesting. You'll see. If you've not heard our shows from CES, tune in next week. It's a little different. We don't take as many calls, for one thing. Jerry Tujunga, California. Tujunga. Hello, Jerry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm not doing too bad. I just have a problem with my fiance's netbook that I bought.
Uh-oh.
She has Windows 7 on it, and I wanted to make it so that the wallpaper rotates as I've seen on some of the other Windows 7 machines, but I haven't been able to do that.
It's because she has the Starter Edition, right? Windows 7 Starter Edition. Yeah. In order to make these really cheap, they use a version of Windows that is really, you know, limited. And they limit it in weird ways. You just found one. You can do wallpaper, but you can't do the rotation.
I haven't even been able to change the wallpaper.
Oh, maybe you can't even change the wallpaper. That may be. Okay. So if you really want wallpaper, you can upgrade to Windows Home Premium. You'll see there's an upgrade in place actually there. That if you look for upgrade, click start, type upgrade, you'll find it. I think they call it Windows Anywhere or something like that. I can't remember. Anytime. Anywho. But I think it's because you have the Starter Edition.
Okay. And upgrading it won't bog down the system?
No, it's the same Windows 7. All you're doing is turning on some features.
Okay, great.
It's, you know, you got it cheap. I think it's, I don't know what the upgrade is from, but they'll tell you the Windows Any, it's, I'm sorry, Windows Anytime upgrade. It's built into all versions of Windows so that you can upgrade. Don't go to Ultimate. You don't need to go to Ultimate. Home Premium's plenty.
Okay, that's great. I really appreciate it, Leo.
Thank you, Jerry. You're a nice boyfriend to do that. It's a very nice thing to do. But you're right. I mean, and there are other limitations. I can't remember what all of them were. Originally, Microsoft was going to say you could only run 3 programs at once. I think they backed down on that. So they had to find some things that you could eliminate. There is a link, and I'll put it in our Real Files is posting it in the chat room, and I'll put it in our show notes at techguylabs.com. There are some third-party applications that will let you do this without buying anything. So I'll put a link to BauerPower.net, where they have an article on how to change the wallpaper in Windows 7 Starter Edition. And there's a few different links. Stardock has a program, Stardock's Starter Wallpaper Changer. That's free. That might be the best thing to do is, you know, if that's all you need, get starter wallpaper changer from the folks at Starduck. Starduck. Wait a minute. No, that's not from Starduck. Starduck has a utility that's not free, but starter wallpaper changer is free, and that's somebody wrote a little program to do that. Starter, I would just Google it. That's what I've done here. And mostly what you'll find is articles that say, here's how you change the wallpaper in your Windows. I guess that's safe. Michael Rancho Santa Margarita, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Yeah, I love your program, and you have an amazing amount of knowledge. Absolutely incredible.
Well, in cases like this, I thank the chat room. I couldn't do it without them. They're my brains.
Right. Well, listen, this is my deal. You know, we had these rainstorms recently, and my mom, she's 95, but she has a computer and uses it quite a bit. She lost the phone line, so I'm going to have to
be
a fellow stream and things. But the more important problem is that on her computer, when you boot it up, it gets to about the wallpaper stage. That's about it. And then you get an error code of some sort.
And did this happen after? Did she have a power outage? Is that what happened?
Well, I don't think it was a power outage, per se. I don't think so. But she's been turning
it. Was it lightning? Did you have lightning during the storm?
Possibly. I don't know.
It's weird that the phone service went out.
Yeah, well, that's another problem. That's
okay.
That's the landline is just not.
Yeah, something's happened to her computer. Basically, it's not completing the boot up. It's just stopping.
Right.
And usually that means that something that the system files that Windows needs to complete the boot are damaged, which either means a failure on the hard drive or, you know, it's not a complete failure. You wouldn't get to the wallpaper, but those files are damaged in some way.
Well, let me tell you what I've done is I've been able to take the hard drive, extract out the documents file.
Good. So you got the backup.
Kind of stuff. But I don't want to have to, and some of the stuff, I gave her another computer that I had, and some of the stuff is on there, but other things I don't want to have to reinstall, you know? So the question is there any way to save that hard drive?
Oh, yeah, almost certainly.
Data.
Usually when this happens, it's not that the hard drive is going bad. I mean, sometimes it is. If the hard drive is going bad, then it's cheap to get a new hard drive. It's a laptop, though, right?
Right. Right.
Yeah. So laptop, that's another matter. Not all laptops allow you to upgrade hard drives. Hard drives are cheap, but if you can't put a new one in, it's not going to help you. There's a program called SpinRite that is an absolute great program. Does the computer have a CD-ROM drive?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So SpinRite's not cheap. It's $90 from grc.com.
Okay.
But what you do is you download it, you put it on a CD, boot the CD, and run it on the hard drive. It may take a while, and it will correct errors on the hard drive. Actually, what it does, it doesn't really technically correct them. It finds sectors on the drive that can't be read or are difficult to read. It doesn't give up where Windows often does. It'll move the data off of there, then mark the sector unusable. And in most cases, that's all you to do, and the drive is then fine after that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Get that question a lot. What is mint? This seems impossible. It's too good to be true. And I love the mint. I put mint on Android phones. I put it on my iPhone. And you get notifications. You can see how you're doing. You can see how your investments are doing. You can see how your checkbook is doing. It's lovely. It's this lovely thing. And it's a great way to kind of keep track of, if you're the accountant in your family, to keep track of what's going on in your family. You can look at each account, see what the transactions are. It is safe. It uses the same back end Quicken does, frankly. So if you trust Quicken, you're going to trust, you can trust Mint. They're both owned by Intuit. One of the things I look at to you know, kind of vet businesses, internet businesses, web businesses, is say, well, how do they make money? You always want to look at that. You know, people say, why do you trust Google but not trust Facebook? It fundamentally comes down to, how do they make money? And when I look at Mint and how they make money, it makes sense to me. They, yes, they do look at, you know, your investments, what your interest rate is on your mortgage or where your money isn't saved or invested. And they will put, it's effectively an ad. It doesn't look like an ad, but they will say, hey, you know, you've got your money in a bank savings account where you're earning 0.01% interest. You know, you could get a CD from this bank, who's an advertiser, by the way, this bank, and get more interest. So it's actually an alert that's of some value saying, you know, you're not really maximizing your savings here. You might want to look at moving it to this bank. You don't have to do it. I ignore them. I don't. I know what I, you know, I think I know what I'm doing, so I just ignore it. But they make a commission, of course, on that new business that they bring that bank, and that's more than enough to run the service. I think it's an amazing service. MINT.com, and I have no hesitation saying it. You can trust it. But believe me, I keep an eye on them because they have all my information. If something changes on that, I'll let you know. Pete, Riverside, California. Hey, Pete, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yeah, I had an experience with 3D television, and basically I was looking for a grandkid magnet, something to get the grandkids over here.
My mom does the same thing. My mom has a Sony PlayStation 3. That's an excellent magnet.
That's it. So anyway, I wanted to get the Kinect, and I wanted to get an overhead projector with a 120-inch screen on the wall,
Ooh.
See?
Wow, so, but then, wouldn't that be amazing?
Well, it was amazing until I found out that you can't get the overhead screen close enough to where it won't interfere with the projection coming out of the Kinect. You know what I mean? So the projector on the ceiling will hit you in the back.
Oh, I see. Yeah, because the Kinect is looking at you. It's got it's got an infrared camera to see where you are in space, or not infrared, a Z camera. It's got a regular camera to see where you are in space. And that camera, if it sees the light from the projector, is going to be baffled.
Yeah, and so you can't get what they call a throw distance where you can get your overhead close enough to the screen. They can probably make them in a business application. But
they do, in fact. You have very short throw projectors, sometimes with just a foot or two from the projector to the screen.
But not in the entertainment application.
Not in the really good home entertainment.
So,
that's frustrating.
What
I'm so sorry to hear that, Pete.
Yeah, well, what I did was I went and was looking in Best Buy, in their Magnolia area there, and they had a Mitsubishi 82-inch
rear projection.
In a sense, that's what that is that's a real short throw distance. It
Absolutely.
Just happens to be in back. And this thing, they've improved those things. It's only like a foot and a half deep. And so what that did is that gave me 82 inches, corner to corner. And then I've got the Kinect in front. And then it also had 3D. Now, the problem that people need to realize is they need to realize that these TVs say that they're 3D ready. Well, that means about $600-$700 more.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Isn't that frustrating? It was the same thing with HD Ready. Remember that?
Yeah. So you have to buy a DVD that's got, at least for the Mitsubishi, you've got to buy a checkerboard thing, and that's for the Mitsubishi. That's the DVD player. It has to be checkerboard compliant.
I see.
And then
you've
got
to
buy
glasses.
So what
they do is of course, you always have to get the glasses, but that's interesting.
They're $150 each.
I know.
And then you've got the content, like you said earlier, and those movies are like $60, but then they come with four DVDs, because they have all the versions of it, and there's only two of them. But now one thing I wanted to mention is the one thing that's nice is that when you view the DVD, it is almost, it's a better view even when they don't do all the effects. You can tell when they're trying to do a really neat effect. But most
Yes, you can. I've been watching Toy Story 3, which was originally in 3D, in 2D, and you can completely tell where, this would be coming right at me right now. Yeah.
But just the regular view with no effects is better, because you get a more deep effect. But
in fact, this is what Scott Wilkinson has been saying, our home theater expert's been saying, is you may get a 3D TV and never use a 3D just because the top-of-the-line TVs all have 3D in them.
It's just better. And then the other thing, too, is with a 50-inch TV, you'll never appreciate 3D. Because if you can imagine a hole in the wall 50 inches square, 3D does nothing for you.
Right.
With a 120-inch screen, it's going to be amazing. With my 82-inch screen, it's right at the limit.
That's good to know. I think that, boy, I'm so glad you called, Pete, because these are all very valuable, and I agree with you, by the way. These are all very valuable pieces of information that is not widely disseminated. Nobody knows this.
But, you know, one scene in Alice in Wonderland, it's snowing, or maybe it was in, it was probably in A Christmas Carol, but anyway, it was snowing, and I swear to you, Leo, it looked like it was snowing in my living room.
Right, right.
Amazing thing. But it wouldn't have been that effect if it was on a 50-inch screen.
No, I'm with you. And I think people see 3D movies in the theater where they're ginormous screens. They see that effect. They come home. It isn't. You're right. It's not going to be quite as dramatic.
Big screen. You need a real big screen.
So very important. So big screen helps with 3D. And don't get a front projection unit. If you want to use a Microsoft Kinect, it won't work.
Now, the other thing is sound. I would say sound is as important or more important than the picture, because you live the sound, you see
yep.
the picture.
I agree.
If you get, you need to, if you're going to invest that much in 3D and the TV, invest at least that much or more in the sound system, because that's what really envelops you in the whole thing. The TV or the 3D part of it, just you see it in front of you. But when you envelop yourself with the sound, that's where you get right into the thing. And I'm telling you, coming into it on an accident, you know, I really discovered that if you do it right, it's a great, wonderful system. That
What did you get for your sound system?
Well, I just got a Denon, and I don't even know if that's...
No, Denon's very good, yeah.
Well, but it's the top of the line of the, you know, in a box type thing. I didn't have enough time before Christmas to really research it, so I'm going to get a lot better one. But this one does fine. I mean, it gets the 5.1 surround sound, and that's what I wanted to get. So.
And now, most important question.
What's that?
Most important question. Have the grandkids come over now, and is it a success?
I couldn't get them down from Las Vegas. So I had my tail between my legs.
But Pete, you're having fun. That's part of the reward anyway.
Oh,
I think they'll love the Kinect. I think they really will. Once they play it, they'll want to go to Grandpa's house a lot more.
Well, that's inviting my kids, but not the grandkids.
Ah, how old are the grandkids?
They're 20. Well, my kids are 20 somethings, and they love the boxing and those kind of things.
Yeah, they're fun.
Amazing. I mean, my daughter was just creaming my son-in-law. It was just,
is that the Kinect Sports package?
Yeah, it's one that's got all kinds of sports in it.
I'll have to get that one. I don't have that one. I have Dance Central, which I love, and of course the stuff that comes with the Kinect, which is fun. But I'll have to get the sports one as well.
It's got boxing and it's got just all kinds of stuff, and it's the best exercise you can get, because it's
I agree.
Exercise, you know, game, but it sure gives you a lot of exercise. So,
Pete, thank you for calling. I appreciate it. Some very good input. Now, I do have somebody in the chat room, Tiles, who says he was able to, and this really comes down to throw distance. If your room is big enough, he was able to mount his projector in the ceiling where the Kinect can't see it. And I think it really comes down to, and this is what you need to investigate before you do it, how far back you can get that projector. You obviously can't put in the ceiling right above the screen. It's not you're not going to get a picture. It has to be a certain distance back. And, you know, if Pete's room isn't big enough, then it's not going to happen. I'm curious, Tiles, how far back your projector is from your screen. You'd have to investigate that, I guess. Hey, thanks for the call, Pete. We really appreciate it. All the best to you. Happy New Year. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.